Voices of VR podcast.
Hello, my name is Ken Pai, and welcome to the Voices of VR podcast. It's a podcast that looks at the structures and forms of immersive storytelling and the future of spatial computing. You can support the podcast at patreon.com/voicesofvr. So continuing my series from Venice Immersive 2025, today's episode is with a piece called Alien Perspective, which is a part of the competition at Venice Immersive 2025. So this is a virtual reality piece that also has some mixed reality components at the beginning and end. And so it's showing the work of Carlo Rambelli. So he was somebody who was working on projects like E.T., Alien, Dune. And so he's doing a lot of practical special effects, but also he's a painter as a conceptual artist painting these worlds of his imagination. And so this was a VR piece that was created to celebrate his 100 years since his birth. And so to kind of reflect upon all of his works that he had created. And so the context that's being explored are like these dreamlike and surreal journeys into these imaginal realms by the artist of Carlo Rambelli. And so the center of gravity of the piece is starting with the earth element in terms of like, it's really a spatial journey through these different imaginal worlds that you're going through. And so it starts off with some mixed reality. And so you're in this kind of gallery space and you see a painting, but then as you put on the VR headset, then it starts to overlay different aspects on top of that painting. And then you kind of like go into these different worlds. And so they describe it as a quote, sensory portal into the unknown. And the quote, painting becomes a living arena of exploration, moving, quote, from passive observation into embodied experience. And so the second center of gravity is the water element in terms of the time-based experience of going through this piece. It's very much like a journey that you're going on, but also like this musical score, and then kind of leaning on this more immersive cinema genre where you feel like you're spatially being transported through a story. And then the third center of gravity is the fire element. And so there are these like different waypoints that are there. And so you are able to kind of choose like which ones you can go to. There are some like slight branching at some points, but eventually they all kind of converge. And so you're mostly going through these fixed waypoint exploration of the piece as you're going through these different perspectives. And so they say it's, quote, inviting audiences to step inside his imagination and engage with his art in a dynamic, navigable universe. And they aspire to bring, quote, legacy artworks into interactive spaces where millions of users can explore, play, and participate. So while there's some freedom to explore, it's still mostly on rails, and most folks will kind of see the same experience. So it's not really like truly branching. So I don't know how exploratory it is rather than kind of more of like this immersive cinema genre rather than like an open world exploration, in other words. And then finally, the air element, the last center of gravity, in terms of like there's different aspects of Rambelli's imagination that you're exploring through. And so it's a bit of a associative dream logic that you're going through, kind of seeing his worlds. What could they mean? What was he thinking about? And that becomes a part of this underlying narrative of kind of piecing together the spatial architecture of these pieces from this kind of imaginal worlds that he's creating. And so they say, quote, this project is a call to democratize access to imagination. And then finally, the kind of archetypal themes and character that's being explored, it's the realms of speculative imagination that is a boundless and unknown in its interface with reality. So this look between imaginal and reality and the potentiality beyond that. So they say, quote, the impossible becomes undeniable. And there's aspirations to transform art by, quote, shifting it from passive observation into embodied experience, and then learning into imagining the future of art by, quote, by emerging visual art, narrative design, and real-time interaction, we are forging new pathways between cultural heritage and future-facing media. So we're covering all that and more on today's episode of the Voices of VR podcast. So this interview with Jung Ah Seo and Christina Rambaldi happened on Sunday, August 31st, 2025, at Venice Immersive in Venice, Italy. So with that, let's go ahead and dive right in.
Hi, I'm Christina Rambaldi. I am the co-creator and co-producer of Alien Perspective.
Hi, I'm Jung Ah Seo. I'm co-creator and director of Alien Perspective.
Great. Maybe you could each give a bit more context as to your backgrounds and your journey into the space.
Yeah, so I actually come from the more conventional movie cinema world. I started out as an actress, then I got more into writing and producing short films and features, narrative. As an actress, I was doing a lot of theater in New York, and I think that was also part of my interest in trying to merge cinematic experiences with more like spatial-oriented narratives, and that's how I think part of the interest in VR came about. Yes.
So let's say, I would say in the last 20 years when I was in New York, I started in brand innovation and worked a lot on marketing campaigns that sort of addressed out-of-the-box thinking for solutions for major corporations in the Fortune 500 companies. So that was primarily where I started in the foundation of it. I think it made a shift because after I departed the brand innovation side, I joined Tom Krenz, the former director of the Guggenheim, when he was trying to build a new museum, a new architecture museum in Massachusetts. And I was responsible in building the VR component of that experience. But this was in the middle of COVID, in the middle of nowhere by MassMoCA in North Adams in Massachusetts, and it was really difficult to find funding. But however, it allowed me and allowed us to do a lot of experimentations on emerging technology, AR, VR, etc. And I completely opened the doors on what I thought could be possible in bringing technology into cultural institutions. So this is sort of where I am today, yeah.
And when did virtual reality come onto your radar professionally? What was your entry point into this space?
Well, Zhangle and I have been friends and collaborators for a very long time, and I'm also the vice president of the Carlo Rambaldi Foundation. And so a few years ago, we were trying to figure out how to, because this year, 2025, is Carlo Rambaldi's centennial, and we were trying to figure out how to best honor his legacy in a way. And we thought that because of what his work had been, and because he was well known for, in a way, like, you know, finding poetry at the intersection between technology and art, what better way to tell a little bit of his story, or rather show a little bit of his work through this medium? And that's when we thought we should definitely experiment with this. And here we are.
Yeah, maybe you could describe a little bit about the context of the painter that's being featured.
Okay, so Carlo Rambaldi is a three-time Academy Award winner for special effects for E.T., King Kong, and Alien. He created the creatures. He's, in a way, one of the major people when it comes to mechatronic inventions in the cinematic realm. And he started out as a painter, and then he brought his experience as a painter and sculptor into the special effects realm, the practical effects. In 1993, with Jurassic Park, CGI became a huge part of our industry, and of course his work, being practical effects, slowed down. So he went back to his origins, which were the paintings. And in the last 20 years of his life, he worked on many other projects, but he created this collection of paintings called Atmosfere Spaziali. And this collection wasn't on anybody's radar for a very long time. And we thought, well, how about we take that? And we craft a journey through one of the paintings inside of part of the collection, inside of his creative journey, and in a way, perhaps, inside his mind.
Nice. And so how did you come across this project, or how did this project really start and begin?
Yeah, so as I was mentioning, that when I started to sort of explore what kind of artists could we collaborate with in the perspective of looking at cultural institutions, it was an interesting eye-opening experience, because looking and working with the idea of artists is grand, but the actual realities and the processes is quite complicated for multiple reasons, because, you know, some artists don't want collaboration, they don't want their work touched, they don't want them to be turned into 3D or virtual environments, etc. And if it's emerging artists, they don't have enough information about it. So I think coming to Carlo Rambaldi's works was absolutely organic, but it was also, in a beautiful way, quite strategic, because obviously he's no longer here, but the essence of his work lent itself so beautifully for what we wanted to achieve, which is that sort of like, oh, the challenge of the cross-section of art and technology in a way that I think he wanted it to be. And obviously working closely, so closely with the foundation, they gave me, obviously working with Christina, so much freedom to play with that. It couldn't have been done without that, for sure, because artists, as you may know, are very incredibly protective of their assets, of their rights, etc. So I think for that reason, you know, it kind of became sort of a revelation, like, oh my God, the actual artist and the artwork in front of us is the perfect model. So that's kind of like how we started to collaborate on that.
And how did you come about being the vice president of the Carlo Rambaldi Foundation?
Well, on a personal note, I'm his granddaughter. And on a more artistic note, I kind of picked up a little bit of what was of his artistic legacy, in a sense that with the Carlo Rambaldi Foundation, we have been preserving his legacy, the actual artifacts that have remained. We continue to do workshops and bring his story to younger generations. And that's something that we feel strongly about. And it was very important for us to continue that path, even though he's not here anymore. Yes.
And then from your perspective, how did this project get catalyzed or get started? How it came about from your perspective?
Well, yes, as I said, being his centennial, it was very important for us to translate his legacy and his work in a language that could engage a new audience, a younger audience. We really strongly wanted to bring this work, which not a lot of people have seen before, the collection and his work as a painter, to the world. So that was incredibly important for us, to find the perfect medium for it. And of course, VR and immersive technology lent itself so well, as Zhang-Lai was saying.
And so where did you begin on this project? Like, where do you start with having this big, vast archive? And then what were some of the very first steps for how to start to translate these series of 2D paintings into a whole immersive journey?
Yeah, so the foundation started with giving us, I would say about, I don't know, maybe, I mean, you might know the number better, but it was maybe 50 to 100 assets, paintings that I've never seen. And it was sort of like an educational process of like, wow, look at this incredible archives of works that nobody really knows about. And I say nobody because I come from the world of, you know, I know E.T., but I don't know beyond that. So we did some thorough research, and I went into Milan and looked at the studios, the archives, looked at all the works, familiarized myself, and took those assets, 2D assets. Obviously, I saw the 3D ones in person in Milan. And then we just began to kind of study them. Early processes were, okay, you know, VR 101. Can we take this painting and literally make it 3D? I mean, really simple, but it was a starting point, and we started to venture into, and we worked with Unreal Engine, and we started to build it in 3D. However, our immediate intention was never to make a duplication or a replica of the original works. I mean, that was from the get-go, never my mission. I wanted to do that as a study, but I think it was really important, not only to the family, but to us, that we wanted to make a translation on what it meant and felt like to be in his environments, but not necessarily make a literal translation. And because, first of all, the literal translations by quite established FX houses could do it 1,000 times better. So that was never the intention. But it was also important to iterate to a newer, younger generations and audiences that don't know about his work. What did he want to translate? What did he want to say about the things he built? And so we really focus on sort of like capturing the emotional qualities of the work. So,
yeah, and maybe you could give a bit more context as to like this archive and these paintings. It sounds like they were hidden or occluded in some fashion. Just curious if they were ever exhibited anywhere or if they were just something that he was doing in like retirement and in this private kind of way. I'm just trying to get a bit more context as to like the origins of some of these paintings and why they were not as well known as they could be.
Well, yes, this was work that he primarily was doing for himself as a creative outlet. Some of these paintings, some were exhibited in very small exhibitions, but part of them had never been seen because it was really something that he was doing for himself as studies, as character studies, as environment studies, as possible universe studies. So, yeah, so that was a little treasure chest of things that it was important for us to be like, hey world, this is also here.
And so with this archive and this collection, how would you describe it? Because, you know, it feels very otherworldly, allusions to alien entities, other creatures, but also a lot of architecture, a lot of these vast spaces underwater. Just what are some of the ways that you describe the sense of these worlds that he's creating?
I would say from an outsider's perspective, because it was the first time I was seeing it, and I don't know what it feels like as somebody who's lived with it, right? But from my perspective, I would say it felt like sci-fi from the 80s. And that can sound negative, but it's actually quite unique, because sci-fi has evolved, obviously, and morphed into so much sophisticated perspectives. But it was really refreshing to go back and to be able to see sci-fi in his eyes, in the sense of it was an outer-worldly place, but it was almost very euphoric, magical. It had no intimidation, but it was incredibly inviting. And it had this feeling of that time in the 80s when technology wasn't quite driving culture, but the hand was. So you really felt that. You felt like it was a very intimate portrayal of science fiction, of the planets, of the aliens, of the worlds that he built. I don't know. It was completely enthralling for me anyway. Yeah.
Curious how you describe these paintings, these worlds that are being created.
Well, what Janga said is perfectly in line with what the essence on a personal note, because I also watched him paint some of these paintings, and of course I knew him very well. They always, for me, they always had a quality, how to explain, a self-portrait sort of quality to them, because he did live in this world where he constantly created possibilities for himself, and he would question reality very often and what could be beyond our perception. And so beyond the aspect that Janga talked about, I do really feel that there was a very specific self-portraity quality to them. And yes, it was very interesting finding a way to also bring that to life.
Yeah, and I think in virtual reality, we have pieces that are kind of narrative driven. So there's a story that's written, a script, and then we have things that are maybe directed by actions and activity. There's also like social dynamics. This feels like very much rooted in the world building and the spatial experience of being taken onto a journey into another world. And so just curious how you describe the journey that you take people on, because it's, you know, through a series of these paintings, but just trying to get a sense of, as you're putting together the narrative structure or the journey that you're taking people on, what you wanted to do in terms of going to places that either had contrast, or it's almost like a guided tour in some ways. And so we're taking a guided tour. And so just curious how you start to describe the tour that you're taking people on.
So I took the approach of really, as I mentioned, he created so many different types of worlds within the sci-fi genre that I wanted his paintings to be almost like inspirations to guide us through these worlds. So these worlds that you're exploring are not necessarily the paintings themselves, but they're sort of the processes, if that makes sense. An entry point, sort of the portal to the paintings themselves. It's kind of the reverse, meaning when you're actually going through the experience, it feels more like you're going through the world and then you discover the paintings, meaning in them. But I was really hoping that the journey itself felt like you were entering the paintings rather than the paintings were taking you there. I don't know if that makes sense. But let me see. I was just thinking about something else. But I don't know. That's why I lost my thought there.
I don't know if you have anything that you wanted to add in terms of the journey.
Well, yeah, as we were mentioning, it is a journey through a creative process. It's not only a journey through the world building, and it is a journey that takes you through the paintings, through the art, through the visuals, through the aesthetic, and also through how he could come to those visions we were really striving for that. Also, that emotional quality of the journey. It's like, how do you enter a creative mind?
Yeah, if I can expand on that. Often from an artist's perspective, you know, we find so many references and inspirations, and then we create our own. And I think in a way, that's what I did. His work was the inspiration. And I thought, if this is what he envisioned, what would that feel like as you were going through this journey? And so rather than trying to make a replica of an example of what he built, I tried to use his work as an inspiration, as a guide to all the environments that he had built. Yeah.
Yeah, it's also really striking the way the experience starts, because you enter into what is sort of like a gallery booth of sorts, where there's a painting that's on the wall that's lit. You put on a VR headset and you're in like mixed reality, and so you see the painting, and then you start to slowly switch into more virtual, diving into the painting, as it were. And I recall that there were some quotes setting the context with maybe more around the inspirations or creative process. But yeah, just curious to hear a little bit more around this magic circle that you're entering into with walking into like a gallery space, and then with mixed reality, and then switching back and forth with the mixed reality into VR, but also like having different sections or chapters with a quote that helps to set some broader context.
Yeah. Often the user always asks, what does it mean to enter a painting? They always ask that question. And of course, there's hundreds of ways to kind of express that. So it was really important for both of us to be really clear on how does that feel and look like. So we took it from the perspective of, we're in Venice Biennale Immersive. Why don't we create a gallery space and actually present the actual painting that he presented, and then express the attitude of, what does that feel like when you enter the painting? And that was the AR moment that we kind of brought into the picture. I would say that was the expression. That was the reason behind having the painting there and being able to enter it.
Yeah, and as I have gone through like 30 hours of content here at Venice, I'm also trying to remember all the specifics. And
yeah.
The piece wasn't like a strong narrative. It felt like more of a guided tour and like an experience of going to these other worlds. But I do recall some quotes that were kind of interstitial quotes, but maybe you could just remind me or just explain a little bit about what kind of things were being said within those quotes to help set additional context as I'm being taken through this journey.
Well, one of the quotes, and you could hear his voice saying it, because this is all archival audio as well, is one of the things that was fundamental to his work, which was the soul of a mechanical creature was movement, because he works with mechanics, and mechanics, as we said before. And I think that is a very interesting thing for us, because we tried to expand that philosophy into what we did with bringing movement into the painting, in bringing that soul into the artwork that you see in front of you and animate it through the moving journey. That's one of them. I don't know if you want to expand on some others.
But maybe there's a couple of quotes that you want to mention, because I know they were incredibly meaningful for you, of your grandfather's message in the data forest.
The mechanical soul, of course, because that's also very relatable to all those people that really love what he did. And I think that's something that a lot of people that have come to see the experience have enjoyed, finding that further insight into his cinematic work as well. Another quote that also contextualizes everything is the fact that he says, I often have these visions, these images that kind of come to me, and I would love to materialize them and imprint them in paint. And that was interesting, because so often his ideas were so big that perhaps paint was the medium he had access to in that moment, but perhaps it was not quite enough. And so, again, that's part of the expansion that we try to give to the artwork, to make it come alive once again. I think that is the highlight of what we were trying to achieve.
What do you think he would have thought of watching this experience of his work?
I think he would have been mind blown. Yes, because he had been working on projects with the idea of having holograms. And this is just the expansion of holograms. I think he would have really enjoyed stepping into the worlds that he had created.
And one of the things I really appreciated about the piece was that there were these kind of circular undulating orb things that you would look at, and sometimes it would reveal like the original painting that would give a bit more context as to like we're in the world, but you're almost seeing the reference images that are giving a broader context to this world that we're immersed in. So it's an opportunity to explore an archives in a way that you feel like you're immersed into the world, and then you're like, oh, well, that's the inspiration for this or that, because you're recreating, like you said, you're taking these paintings as a inspiration to create your own twist, but it's also often replicating a lot of the originals and spatializing it or giving it more full context. And so a number of different characters, there's like architectural buildings, there's worlds that he's creating. So yeah, just curious to hear around your process of creating these reference points that go back to the original paintings that help give that context as you're immersed into the spatial journey through his work.
Yeah, that was really fun because we really wanted to take a non-linear approach in how you're guided through a cultural sort of narrative. And I look at a museum again, and what I really miss in a museum is this, it's beautifully curated, but it's often controlled in the sense that you see the work, but then the references are often in a different room, and you can't put in context right away immediately what you want to know about that reference. So I think VR is like the perfect avenue for being able to insert and integrate everything you want. Sound bites, you know, messages, references, experiences, you know, emotions, narratives, all in one space. And that 360, I think, tool is really the best outlet for something like this. And it was really important for us to kind of gently present that rather than in your face because, well, first of all, because out of respect for Carlo Rambaldi, but also because we wanted it to be sort of like a gentle reminder that, hey, VR doesn't have to be sophisticated, you know, aggressive, active. It can be gentle. It can be soft. It can be actually passive. And it could influence people who are not that tech savvy and be able to enjoy something and learn something. But at the same time, it could really engage younger audiences that need to be able to interact in a different way. So we were trying to kind of reach a broader audience and circle, not for the sake of wanting to be accepted, but for the sake of just reaching a larger audience and letting them know what Carlo Rambaldi was all about. Yeah.
Just to hear your thoughts on using this a VR experience like this as an exhibition format and being able to include all the different media and take people on a spatial journey.
Well, yeah, as Zhang was saying, of course, there are artists that lend themselves better to it. In our specific case, it was so organic. But I do believe there is a way in to every artist and every artwork. I think that what's so great about VR immersive and what's in the community is that there are so many possibilities right now coming to life. Like, there's not one way to do this. Like, storytelling, the formats that are being crafted at this time are just so innovative and interesting, and there's so much space for experimentation that's usually not allowed or entertained in conventional contexts. And it's really exciting. It's really exciting.
Yeah, it also reminds me of a piece that's being featured here in the VR Chat Worlds Gallery. It's called What is Virtual Art? And it's really a meditation on creating these virtual spaces to show virtual art, art that can only exist within the context of VR. But I feel like in some ways what you're doing is taking something that could be exhibited in a physical installation because there are paintings on all these artifacts, but creating this whole virtualized interpretation in these worlds and this journey that can also give a fuller context to the work in a way that allows you to step into the painting, as it were. So it's also in this exhibition, museum context. And so just curious to hear a little bit about, as you've created this now and you want to, looking forward, celebrating the centennial, if you would hope to, you know, have like a museum exhibition where people could go into the VR works, and then to, like, just like the impressionists that was here at Venice, they would have this VR experience to see all these impressionist paintings, and then actually people go see the paintings afterwards, and so kind of get introduced to this world through the VR, but then also have the opportunity to go and see the originals. And so just curious to hear, like, what some of the plans are for the centennial that's coming up.
Yeah, I think that's perfectly said in the way you phrase it. I think we were hoping, but I think it's been affirmed when we're seeing the reactions of people that VR alone doesn't necessarily, is not the most effective, and physical alone is not. So I think the convergence of the two is the ideal scenario for us in our current mission. So we're hoping to really present this alien perspective in different environments where we can bring in more physical products, physical artworks, and then be able to see the virtual in tandem or right after, quickly after. Obviously, you know, that takes time, that takes funding, et cetera, that takes support, which I think we confidently feel like we will have. But in parallel, we hope to develop digital platforms so that we can also bring these experiences inside the homes of these users so that they don't have to travel to Venice or Dubai or wherever to be able to experience Carlo Rambaldi.
Yeah. So I guess what's next following Venice here after you exhibiting here? What's the plans as you move forward?
Well, we can just say for now. not true. We can say for now that we'll keep traveling, keep on bringing it in the festival circuit, keep on bringing it within the VR community. There's going to be some physical events happening, probably in LA and New York, that will be announced very soon. And yeah, and the plan is to expand this universe and bring it to as many people as possible.
What I can say is when we designed Alien Perspective, it was really with the intention that it was sort of like a first look. It was a teaser. So it was intentionally done in a sense of, oh, you've had a taste, you've entered it. But we also kind of prompted a few sort of questions and left visual kind of thoughts. And so some of them things are like codes and entries. You don't really get to meet the aliens, and or do you? And we wanted to pose these visual creative questions in light of wanting to extend this project and introduce new environments, new extensions, and answers to those questions moving forward. So yes, our plan is to do that, different environments.
Yeah, I did notice at the end that, you know, you cut back to mixed reality and that you were overlaying one of the alien creatures in the environment with you. And so I don't know if what you meant in terms of meeting the creatures, because there is a little bit of an encounter there.
Yeah, exactly. The hope was there was that he does come, he or it, sorry.
Or she.
She, yeah. Proper, I have to be politically correct. But it comes out, you connect, but you don't really communicate, and it goes away. So hopefully, you know, you get to meet him one day, it one day.
Yeah, the other thing that was striking to me as I was, you know, going through and seeing the paintings and the experience was just this architecture that is being featured there. I'm here in Venice and saw the Architecture Biennale, so I'm just paying attention to the structures that are also being featured, because there's these fantastical worlds, but there's also a lot of buildings and really quite sci-fi futuristic architecture. I'm just curious if you could comment on some of the different buildings and structures that are being featured in his paintings.
Well, one of the last projects that Carlo was working on was a futuristic city. He had talked a little bit about it in some of his last interviews. So yes, there is something to that world. There is something architectural about it. And again, we wanted to bring a little taste of it that will hopefully unfold in the next iterations of the project. But yes, it's actually correct. There's an architectural prompt that's there to be discovered.
I wonder if you could comment on the sound design and the music that's being featured. Felt a lot of like, you know, walking through a dream of the journey of the experience, but also the emotional tenor set by both the music and the sound design. So just curious if you could elaborate on that a little bit.
I'm going to start it, but I'll let Christina finish on it because she can give you much more context. But it was also important for us in the beginning in choosing a composer that was not necessarily, you know, I'm making an assumption that what we're doing is unconventional, but maybe that's not true. Maybe it's quite conventional and everybody is thinking this. But we really wanted to take the approach of finding a composer that doesn't typically work with this genre. And so we chose an Italian composer that we thought had incredible history in house music, for example. So he had a different kind of an approach to the way he composes music and his different array of collaborators in the past. So yeah, Christina can elaborate on who that was. And
so we worked with Michele Balduzzi, known as Fonat, and we worked with his UK studio, Take Your Medicine. And yeah, it was very important when we started meeting him. We wanted to craft something that was different from what could be expected. We gave him some references. He gave us some reference. We really were striving to find something that was part of the world per se. It was not only accompanying you, but it was part of the experience in the best possible way. And he was fantastic because he really created that soundscape that perfectly mixed with the material we were working with.
And as I think about this experience, it does feel like a teaser, like, okay, who is Carlo Rambelli? What was his story? It almost feels like this could lead into like a more robust documentary about his life, his journey, you know, other biographical details. We haven't really mentioned much around who he was and his journey and where he's from, you know. So just curious if that's intentional in the way that you're keeping that back, or if it was very private, or if that's something that you want to expand on, or yeah, just provide an opportunity to give a little bit more context as to, you know, we talked about his journey into special effects, but if there's any other kind of biographical information. I'm assuming he might be from Italy, and yes.
Yeah, no, of course. Yes, he was from Italy. He was from a very small town near Ferrara, so northern Italy. And as we mentioned, he started with painting and sculpting. He studied at the Accademia di Belle Arti of Bologna. And there is a documentary in the works that might be happening next year. So that's all we can say. But his journey is very inspiring because he was truly, it's funny, in the same way he built creatures, somehow he built his own destiny. Because special effects were not even a thing. He did not get into special effects. In a way, he invented special effects. In fact, his first Oscar in 1976 with King Kong, there wasn't even a special effect category. It was a special achievement category. So that whole world was not even there. And yes, so biographically, it's very interesting to see how he came about into this world. And also, another thing that I personally find very timely, as I was saying, his works started slowing down with the advent of CGI. And it's interesting because we're sort of living a very similar moment with AI right now. So there's a lot of questions there that I think we need to ask and explore that particular subject.
Yeah, I was having some conversations reflecting on, you know, since 1989 till now, the impact of the internet and social media and kind of this mass addiction to smartphones and people's attention being distracted. And also, as things get more and more automated and the isolation and the moving from movie theaters and people gathering to, like, you know, Netflix and, you know, the gig economy and people having food delivered to their homes, there's a sort of a way that the technology has, in some ways, created a more atomized, isolated society, but there's still progress that's there. But yeah, what's lost in terms of the automation and the special effects? And it feels like a piece like this is showing us going back into this really handcrafted, bespoke creation of worlds through painting. So, yeah.
Yeah, correct. And that the collaboration with emerging tech and the consumption of emerging tech can be innovative and can be humanizing. And how does that work? And so that's something that I think we really wanted to touch on. We touched on it, to be fair. I think in Alien Perspective, we didn't necessarily reveal any answers or solutions, but it definitely opens the doors about how we as consumers look and want to use technology and how do we want to use it to drive our creative processes as well.
Yeah, and as you were putting together this piece and taking us on this journey, just curious how you negotiated trying to find a narrative arc or, you know, include biographical information. It seems like you leaned away from having too much outside of the main thrust of kind of a journey into Carlo Rambelli's like imagination and in the worlds that he's creating. But just curious to hear if that was a part of the discussion to see like how much context about the creator and other kind of biographical elements that you might have included into a piece like this.
Yeah, I think it was definitely intentional on my part, and I've always had like 100% of the support from the Rambaldi Foundation and Christina on this. But again, I was really thinking about the audience, and I mean target audience. I don't mean the audiences at Venice Immersive, because this was sort of a blessing and a gift. But the target audience, I don't think this generation necessarily wants to be told who you are, what you are, and what it's done. And so I really want it to be much more of a subconscious level. Like, you can feel it, you can sense it, you know, we give you little bites of it, but the exploration is kind of open and meant for you to digest and meant for you to sort of unravel. And so we took the approach of sort of layering that information about Carlo Rambaldi and much more of a subconscious, passive, preliminary level, and that hopefully it would engage their interest to say, okay, I get it, I'm curious, give me more, and we can maybe start to play from there.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember, my recollection of going through the piece was that I felt guided, and I was looking at the little undulating orbs and choosing them, and so there was some interactivity and agency, but I don't recall if I was locomoting or controlling the direction. My recollection is that I was a kind of a guided tour and I'm being moved through it, but I could have also been moving through it. Does the user control it or are you guiding people?
No, it was completely guided and curated, but hearing you describe it, then it worked. Because you can't really remember if you were controlled or not.
Yeah, I remember being moved through, but then I remember, was I controlling going up or down? And I think the experiences like this, the memory gets a little like it's a dream that I'm trying to remember the dream and the specifics. So
I've seen 100 pieces.
It's also a part of it. But yeah, I think, okay, so yeah. So you're a passive in the sense that you're being guided through. You do have like these little interactive moments that you can choose to get more information, but it's kind of like a golden path that you're taking people on.
Correct. I think these prompts help because once you interact, engage in some form or fashion, there's sort of an immediate reward in knowing that you triggered that information rather than it's just being thrown at you. So that was the point of those small engagements that we integrated.
Yeah, it gives this experience of kind of discovering different aspects. And yeah, I really appreciated the revealing of the deeper context. So yeah, I guess as we start to wrap up, I'd love to hear what each of you think is the ultimate potential of virtual reality and immersive storytelling and taking people on archival spatial journeys of the mind of artists and what that might be able to enable.
That's a very deep question. The ultimate potential of that. Well, again, we are starting to see now what that could look like. We're starting to see now what the potentials of that could look like. We are so fortunate to be at a time where this world and worlds are opening up. I think we haven't even scratched the surface of what's possible. So it's a very challenging question to ask, but it's definitely perhaps more than a question. It's what I'd like to leave all of us with. It's like, what's next? What could be next? What can we imagine? Because that's the limit right now. your imagination is the limit. Can we go beyond that? And can we, like, how does that, these tools are just incredible. And it's kind of up to us to challenge ourselves to go beyond what has been done so far and perhaps even question what has been done so far and build our own ways.
I love how VR can transport you to different environments at different times that you just physically cannot. So, I mean, for example, I mean, just doing the story about Carla Rambaldi, I mean, you could not have done this 50 years ago. And imagine if he was here, he would have been so excited to have been able to share what he's done with the world that he wasn't able to. So I think that transportable element is amazing and it's opened the doors. But I would love that when we're in this 360 environment, that it is an inclusive one, that it doesn't have to exclude certain communities and certain genres, that it can bring them together rather than separate them. I've done a lot of work in the arts, and so this, I think, exclusivity amongst the arts is quite prevalent. And it's a shame because it's an incredible 360 tool to storytell and innovate story time, actually. So yeah, I'm hoping that it opens the doors. I'm hoping that the technologies, the newer technologies that are already infiltrating all of that, what we do, is much more integrated and collaborative, and that it isn't looked upon as the villain. That I hope that it really opens the doors for the creative worlds, for new generations, that now they have this unbelievable tool to build what we've never been able to see before. Yeah.
Okay. Anything else left unsaid or any final thoughts you'd like to share with the broader immersive community?
We're very grateful to be here. And again, I think this community is fantastic because all that we've been experiencing so far has been just so welcoming and beautiful. And it's really, the community is, I think, part of the excitement of the medium. So it's really exciting to be part of it.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for joining me here in the podcast to help break down a little bit about Alien Perspective, and really enjoyed the journey, and best of luck as you move forward and find all the different contexts to introduce new audiences to this work that they may not be aware of. It's a real immersive journey through the mind of someone who's been thinking about all these kind of imaginative worlds. And yeah, it's just a real pleasure to kind of be introduced to him in this way. So thanks again for joining me here on the podcast to help break it all down.
Thank you so much.
It was a real pleasure talking to you, Kent. Thank you.
Thanks so much for tuning into this Venice Immersive 2025 coverage, and hopefully you found some use in some of this documentation of these experiences that are very ephemeral. And some of these show at these festivals, and they don't really go out widely beyond this a lot of times. I mean, maybe they are, but you may not be in a place that it's easy for you to see them. And so it's a real privilege to be able to see all these experiences, but also to be able to sit down with these creators and have a really deep, in-depth conversation in a way that there are not a lot of other opportunities to really dig into at this level. And so really appreciate all the time from all the creators to be able to have these conversations, but also for you to take the time to listen to them. And also, it's been a challenge of trying to find a way of speaking about these experiences in an abstract, theoretical way, or at least in a way that I can ground it and allow you to put yourself into the experiences to kind of imagine some of these different things that they're doing, how I'm experiencing it, but also the different types of design decisions that the creator is making. So if you find this useful and want to support this type of effort of both documenting the history of immersive storytelling, but also to support this kind of wildly ambitious independent journalism project that is very much driven by support by listeners like yourself. So please do consider becoming a member of the Patreon at patreon.com/voicesofvr. Thanks for listening.